Hey guys, welcome to Thrive Bites Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Colin Zhu, and thank you so much for listening on. You could have been anywhere in the world, and you decided to spend just a few moments of your precious time, and we greatly appreciate it. Here on the podcast, we talk about three things: living a plant-powered lifestyle, and enhancing emotional resilience, and creating a thriving mindset. And I interview a range of passionate guests, such as physicians, dietitians, coaches, entrepreneurs, and many more. And please join me as I deliver these engaging, informative, and high-valued conversations for you. And just remember, the first five seasons of the Thrive Bites podcast can now be found in the new The Chef Doc app, available in your Apple Store and Google Play stores. So what are you waiting for? Come on inside. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Thrive Bites Podcast. I'm joined by the Dr. Angela Dyer, and we talk everything about nutrition, family planning, infertility, and how to cook in the kitchen, and all the different learnings that she has learned with her colleague, Judy Simon, who is a registered dietitian from their Food for Fertility program, which has been going on for at least a decade, and their new book, What to Anticipate, What to Expect. You don't want to miss this episode, and I'll see you guys inside. Okay, guys. Well, welcome to another episode of Thrive Bites Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Colin Zhu, and thank you so much for being here with us. You could have been anywhere in the world, and you decided to join us today, and I am really, really appreciative of that. Guys, we have a wonderful, wonderful guest with us today. Her name is Dr. Angela Dyer. She is a board-certified physician, and not just one, but I believe three specialties, which is reproductive endocrinology and infertility, obstetrics and gynecology, or as we know as OBGYN, and also in lifestyle medicine. She's a diplomate of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine. She's a graduate of Duke University, as well as the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine, and she's completed her residency and fellowship on all these different types of specialties, and her main interest has always been nutrition. Well, actually, I will ask her, has it always been nutrition, exercise, fertility, lifestyle medicine, healthy aging, and PCOS, also known as polycystic ovarian syndrome. And she has served on the faculty of the University of Washington and also 2004 co-founded Seattle Reproductive Medicine Group. And she also has the largest fertility practice on the West Coast. And she went on to develop the Food for Fertility program with Judy Simon, which we're going to talk about in 2012. And not only that, because she was bored and had nothing else to do, she's also a certified plant-based chef through the Ruby Online School. And she loves sharing recipes and cooking techniques with everyone. And she lives in Seattle with her husband. So without further ado, please welcome Dr. Angela. Hi.
Hi, Colin. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to talk to you today.
It's wonderful to talk to you again. We actually crossed paths not last year, but the year before when we were doing interviews on the street per se, which right. is basically interviewing random people in the annual conference of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine. So how have you been? Where are you calling from?
Yeah, I've been great. I'm in Seattle right now. And, Judy and I are just very busy right now talking about our new book that's out, going to be coming next week, Getting to Baby, and just having a great time, really doing that among other things.
Awesome. Awesome. Let's start off with the superheroine story, the origin story of point A and point B. How did your life path get you towards reproductive endocrinology and infertility and OBGYN? What was the light bulb moment, or what was the series of moments that led you on this pathway?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody's life journey is fascinating, right? I love hearing people's stories. And for me, you know, when I was in undergrad, I loved biology. I loved understanding the why and the how of how things worked. And then I just loved the human body. How does, you know, and then that naturally progressed to medicine. And I was naturally drawn to taking care of women, women's health, and then reproductive and endocrinology and infertility is this unique blend of understanding hormones, how hormones work in the body, which is fascinating. And then, you know, helping people who have things like menstrual disorders, early or late puberty, anything having to do with that, menopause, and then, you know, fertility problems, which can run the gamut from hormonal problems to other problems. So I really just was drawn to that area. I started working in that area. And then through my fellowship, I really became interested in more of the metabolic aspects, like how does glucose and insulin affect the hormones and how does it affect ovulation? And I conducted a bunch of studies for women with PCOS to look at different aspects of their health and their hormones and say, hey, if we do this or that, can we manipulate things to try to improve ovulation and get pregnant?
Awesome. Awesome. And how did nutrition and lifestyle medicine it sounds like it was the next natural progression in terms of acquiring, because I'm sure I would like to know what was your medical school and residency experience in terms of, you know, was there any nutrition or lifestyle medicine or self-care and that was taught during school? And was that a natural progression or did something happen personally, or did something happen in your patient population for you to say, I want to take the next step in terms of, you know, powering up with my knowledge base?
Right. Yeah. No, I don't really remember much in the way of a nutrition education. If we had one lecture on it during the 4 years, maybe. I honestly don't remember. I'm very grateful now that some of the lifestyle medicine and nutrition education and culinary medicine is getting, you know, integrated into some medical schools. It's just very much the entry point, but I think that's going to be so important. But personally, I feel like, yeah, it was an evolution for both myself personally, kind of as I learned more about food. I've always just been interested in food and enjoyed food and kind of learning then how food affects fertility. And when I first started going to conferences, looking at nutrition and how it could affect health and fertility, nobody was really, you know, no, I don't think anybody else was doing it. I started working with dietitians, like I started working with Judy Simon at the University of Washington. And, you know, I found I had a common interest in this area, like, you know, that a lot of other physicians didn't necessarily share. There's just so much else to cover. And so, you know, everybody kind of covers what they're interested in and goes a little more in depth within their field. And so for me, it really was that nutrition aspect and food. And so going to lifestyle medicine conferences, discovering ACLM, and then, you know, going ahead and getting board certified and then taking it to the next level and saying, hey, I want to up my own game and do the plant-based chef thing, because I've always enjoyed cooking. Cooking always came easily to me, but like doing that, I was like, wow, you know, learned so much more and so much depth, and then felt like I was better equipped to pass some of that knowledge on to patients.
Awesome. So let's talk about your colleague, Judy Simon, and, you know, she's not here to speak for herself. What was that synergy like? There's nothing to me, whenever you meet people, it's almost like you've been friends with them for a very, very long time. Was it that kind of connection for you, or was it more of a professional connection of, oh, you know, we're super interested in the same things? You know, how did that connection happen? And then also, you know, tell us and share your story in terms of this program that you guys started in 2012, Food for Fertility.
Yeah. So I think initially when I was a young faculty member at the University of Washington and I was, you know, had just finished my fellowship and all these great studies, and I had a focused practice with a lot of patients with PCOS or polycystic ovary syndrome, who, you know, one of the basic things is some issues with the metabolic systems and glucose and insulin and ovulation and, you know, other things like hypertension or fat getting deposited in the liver, other kinds of things, high lipids, high triglycerides. And I was like, gosh, I really can use the support of somebody else. And so I did, you know, kind of start looking at the dietitians and other people who were maybe more in the diabetes realm, because a lot of people with PCOS also have prediabetes with that metabolic focus. And I found Judy. I don't remember. I think we just started having mutual patients. Like I would have a patient who needed to see a dietitian and I would refer to her and I'd be like, oh my gosh, she's saying exactly what I think. Like we just had the same philosophy of care about kind of like, it's not necessarily about weight loss. A lot of people would just say, hey, it's, you know, you need to lose weight. And that we've just both thought that does not seem right. Like it seems like it's more about the quality of the nutrients than, you know, yeah, losing weight can lower insulin resistance and sometimes cause this critical threshold to be passed where somebody will ovulate, but it's more than that. It's deeper and it's more nuanced. And we really want people to understand more than just like do this restrictive dieting and then you'll be fine. That's definitely not the case. And as time has gone on, you know, obviously there's all this rebound when you lose weight and regain it. So we're like, yeah, that we knew that right, you know, from the beginning that that was not a good way to go. So we had this different approach of really looking at the quality of foods. And then we thought, wouldn't it be great if like some of these women who have so many commonalities, what if we taught them together in a common setting and kind of gave them some tools and skills to be able to, you know, help themselves, like get that internal motivation and learn the why and then have fun and learn to cook different foods that could really help. Because, you know, I think what the commonality is, so many people just do what's easy and convenient, right? So if it's easy and convenient, it tastes good. That's what people get into patterns of doing. And then they don't necessarily change unless somebody maybe introduces them to something else. So we started these little pop-up cooking classes in our staff room where we'd bring a burner and we'd bring in the food and, you know, kind of sit at the work tables and start cooking and talking and teaching and then kind of expand it into a curriculum. And this was before I knew this was truly culinary medicine, which is now pretty
before,
much
you did
more,
this before enrolling into Ruby and all that?
Yeah, way before. This was like 2012. So when we started. So, you know, it would be like 6 weeks or 8 weeks of these kind of like, let's go over these different food groups and kind of talk through what the benefits are for each of these groups and why you should maybe try and include more of these foods and more of these foods and, you know, more legumes and more whole grains and more vegetables and why these are so important for both you and if they had a male partner, for their male partner to improve their fertility. And we just had success. Like women were, you know, getting pregnant either on their own or if they had done fertility treatments and were in the midst of new cycles, they made better embryos. Like one of my first patients had done a couple of IVF cycles and her embryos were really poor quality. And they told her, you know, you need to move on. We don't think you should do a third cycle. And she's like, I just want to do everything I can, right? People want to do anything possible. And so she did make some changes to her diet and really upped her game with the antioxidants and everything else. She did a third cycle of IVF, made fabulous embryos, way more than she ever had extras to freeze and got pregnant, you know, and then was able to go back and have another baby from those frozen embryos later. So it's like, we see the evidence that it's working. And it's just, it's kind of it's a neglected part of our field. And so we just feel lucky that we can collaborate. And then we wanted to share this message on a broader scale than just our group of 12 women we're teaching at a time. Mm. And so that's why we tried to, you know, kind of translate this information and shift it into a book form.
Yeah. And definitely want to talk about the book in a minute. Can you orient the audience a little bit in terms of infertility rates, right? Has it gone up increasingly over time? And does that parallel in terms of obesity rates? Does that parallel, you know, with how we've created a lot more processed foods? Like, has any of the studies done that kind of comparison?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely an increase, right? So I think the traditional, the dogma for the longest time was, you know, one in six couples will struggle with fertility in their lifetime. Now it's one in five in the United States. It's still, I think, one in six worldwide, but it has changed. And I think, you know, there's a lot of factors going into that. One is Certainly as people delay fertility and trying to conceive, especially until after age 30, fertility rates are going to naturally go down as eggs and sperm start to age and so show some degradation and aren't as efficient in their cell division and other things. But the other things are, yeah, the increase in the way we're all more sedentary. I mean, a lot of people now have sedentary jobs where they're sitting in front of a computer or a screen and they're not as active as they used to be on a day-to-day basis, the little activities throughout the day. And then our food system has completely shifted, right? So after over the past, you know, 2 to 3 decades. And so I think that's finally taking a toll on the reproductive system. And you think about what percentage of people's diets are made up of these ultra processed foods. And I think that, yeah, now we're starting to see some studies about some of the linkages between ultra processed foods and negative health outcomes. But I think that's kind of been in the background the whole time is that when you're eating more ultra processed foods, that's taking space in your diet. And it's taking space that then can't be occupied by fresh fruits and vegetables, fiber filled foods, you know, healthy proteins, healthy fats, whole grains. And so you're not only kind of filling up your system with foods that aren't helpful, you're missing out on all the good foods. And so then, yeah, so then systems suffer. And because fertility is like what's happening this month with the sperm and eggs and the uterine lining, you know, you can quickly see it's not like diabetes or hypertension that might take 20 years to develop. You're going to see the effects pretty quickly if maybe the nutrients aren't as good. And if you optimize those, then pretty quickly you can see some improvement.
Yeah, because, you know, like we said, and I don't know if any of the preconception counseling goes into this, but to me, it's kind of like a duh, right? You know, when you're applying the six pillars, because I think of things around chronic inflammation, oxidative stress, dysbiosis, as well as lack of fiber, right? 97% of our Americans are lacking fiber. And, you know, just not even getting the recommended servings of fruits and vegetables, which is 5 to 9. And even that one person, that one American that gets it, we are learning so much about modern agriculture. I had a regenerative farmer on the show a few episodes ago. He says that our current soil health is also 60% deficient of nutrients, that if you were to grow an apple and eat an apple today is way different than the nutritional profile of an apple 50, 60 years ago. So we have a lot of catching up to do. And so, you know, I'm very happy that you have kind of stockpile in the sense of education, the different types of certifications and expertise to really help that conceiving mother, that, you know, mother that wants to plan out, because, you know, it's important. I think there is a study that I read that just on average, there's an average amount of like around 100 toxins that get passed from, you know, mother to womb, you know, just average, right? We're not even talking about nutrition. We're just talking about, you know, just how toxic our world is now, right? Which is a whole nother podcast episode.
Right. So. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I completely agree with all of that. I think.
Hey guys, we're going to be taking a short break, but don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Hey guys, what's going on? This is Dr. Colin Zhu, and thank you so much for hopping on to this week's episode. Guys, it's 2024. What is your intention for this year? Who do you want to become and how do you want to feel? Some of the things that you might be, you know, looking to do is to lose weight. Some of you guys want to get out of your family history and genetics and not play victim to your medical and health destiny. Well, I'm here to tell you that it's very, very important to kind of look at some facts and figures. For weight loss, 71% of Americans are overweight and 40% are considered and classified as obese. And these numbers are continuously rising. A lot of these are associated with a lot of medical issues, arthritis, gallstone issues, heart disease, cholesterol, diabetes, cancer, and the list goes on. And also having and carrying extra weight increases your risk for COVID.
Also, you know, in terms of chronic disease, 60% of Americans carry one chronic disease, 40% two or more. Whenever I get a patient, it's usually a laundry list of medications that they are taking at the same time. Guys, if you are looking for a different and alternative solution, I've created a solution for you guys, and that's in the form of group coaching. If you want to be coached by us, Dr. Zhu, and our team members, me and my team, I've set up a beautiful, beautiful 12-week, 3-month program that's going to be led by your own respective group coach, also led by me teaching you expert classes, and we teach you on what to eat, how to shop, what recipes to go for, where to navigate the supermarket, your pantry, your kitchen, and learning all about sustainable strategies on losing weight and preventing chronic disease. So if you want to learn more, click on the link below, and we would love to set up a breakthrough call with you guys to see if we are a mutual fit. And I want to be able to cheerlead and advocate you guys and be a support for your wellness journey. So click on the link, schedule a call, and hear about our bonuses that we have in store for you guys. So we'll see you guys on the next one and enjoy the rest of this episode. Welcome back to Thrive Bites. Let's get back to the interview.
Soil health is so, you know, important, the microbiome, the biome within the soil, right? We talk about our microbiome in our gut, our skin, our oral cavity, our uterus, you know, the uterus has a microbiome. But yeah, I think things, one of the things I'm also studying is, you know, behavioral science and a systems approach and things like that. And I do think that it's hard to get knowledge out there when we're bombarded with marketing and sales, and you know what somebody is saying might be good is maybe not quite, it's not the full picture, it's an incomplete picture. But I think one of the things, just to speak to the regenerative farming, which I think is so important and I fully support, is that we recommend, you know, almost buying local produce more than, you know, if you had to choose between local and organic, national or international companies, we would always, almost always say buy the local produce first. If you can buy during the growing season in your region, so spring, summer, fall, whatever is, you know, you can look when you're going to a grocery store, you know, some of the grocery stores will have little labels and they'll tell you what country or what, mm-hmm. you know, region your food is from. And if it has been shipped a shorter distance, you know, especially if it's in the state where you are, it's going to retain more nutrients than if it had to take a week to get to your store and it was refrigerated and picked when it wasn't quite as ripe. And so, you know, farmers markets or groceries, and really asking, where's your produce from? I mean, I'm in Washington, where apples, you know, a lot of the apples in the US come from Washington. And when you buy apples at the farmers market and all the different varieties, right? So it's not just one or two types. You can just taste the difference. And then that taste and the nutrients, you know, are so much richer than something that's kind of paled. And you can tell that, like in our tomatoes, which don't taste the same and they don't contain the same amount of lycopene, right? The nutrients sure. that we really need for men's sperm. Just so many things like that, where it's just diminished the quality of the food. So we do what we can because we do live in food systems. And so you have to say, well, what's the best we can do, you know, today?
Yeah. And I think, you know, to comment on, there's many things to comment. So the comment on the advent of internet, social media, and now artificial intelligence, you know, we have increasingly a lot of forces that we have to combat. And I'm really proud of the work that of our organization, the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, has done exponentially over time. And we have that kind of force to contend with. We have competing interests in terms of corporations, the weight loss industry, the food and beverage industry, that just creates things and products to create repeat customers. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really address the cause and the root cause of all the different things that we just talked about, right? And then agriculture is an entirely different, you know, topic to talk about as well. So a lot of competing interests and a lot of competing companies. So I appreciate the work that you do. Going back to infertility, when, you know, can you
can you debunk some common misconceptions or myths about preparing for fertility for our mothers that are listening?
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, one of the things some people may not realize is like when you ovulate an egg, that egg has been getting prepped for 3 months. So it's about a 90-day window of development where that egg is, you know, initially you have a whole group, a bigger group that start down the developmental path, and it gets kind of, it shrinks down until you get to the one that's chosen to ovulate. Or in the case of IVF, if you're recruiting more eggs 2 weeks earlier, you're getting that group of eggs, but it's been 90 days. So the prep phase of where you're influencing the health and the quality of that egg is really much longer. And so, you know, as people are thinking, that's why, you know, kind of people say take a prenatal vitamin with folic acid, you know, start that before you're ready to get pregnant, because you want that, all of those nutrients on board. And of course, I think the same way about food. We want your food to be optimized by the time you're ready to ovulate and have an embryo implant. And then for sperm, it's a little bit shorter. It's more like 70 days. So, but same thing. So if somebody, you know, has been using alcohol or cannabis, exposures to BPA, the plastics, you know, we talked about some of the, you know, you mentioned the toxins, which are becoming more and more a part of our environment, air pollutions, phthalates, bisphenols, you know, forever chemicals, all these things that kind of can get into our body and stay there can affect our reproductive system. So like, you know, we do talk a little bit about how to minimize those in the food, in the foods we eat, and then, you know, air filters and things like that. But really trying to optimize everything so that your gametes and your body is making the best things they can for preparation for pregnancy. So that's number one, is that, you know, it takes time. And then once you're kind of in that path, it's like every month you have an opportunity to make it just that much better, right? Like, oh, let me add this. Let me do that. Let me just make it a little better. You know, I think a lot of people are, another kind of myth is people kind of expect it to happen right away, right? Like when you're like, okay, we're ready. We're going to pull the goalie. We're going to make it happen. Stop our contraceptive method. Try and conceive. And people will start using, you know, trackers and apps and all kinds of things. And one of the myths is those haven't shown to be any better than kind of natural fertility methods of like, hey, am I ovulating? Do I have regular cycles? Does my temperature rise in the second half of my cycle that proves, yeah, I'm ovulating? So those trackers, you know, some people love feedback and love data, but it doesn't actually get to the end goal faster. And so, you know, one of my points, I think, is just if it hasn't happened after a few months where you've really been trying consistently, that, you know, go get more information, you know, do everything you can on your own, but then consider going in. You know, we say 6 months if you're 35 or older. If you're not pregnant by that time, then the chances have actually gone down that you're going to go get pregnant on your own. So it really is important to see a specialist, you know, in infertility at that point to do some testing and find out if there's something else that's maybe treatable that you could be missing on your own.
Gotcha. Awesome. The next question I have is, what is surprising about nutrition or food that you've learned later on in your career that you didn't know before?
Oh, yeah. I mean, so some of the things, I feel like there's not great communication between nutrition and dietetics in the medical community, right? So first of all, so I did not know that 9 out of 10 reproductive aged people, adults in this country, do not get enough fruits and vegetables. Like, that's shocking. You know, the whole 5-a-day campaign, public health messaging, it just gets diminished by all the other noise of, you know, shiny, happy people eating, you know, foods that aren't as good for you. And yes. So the really good foods that nobody's paying to advertise that are in the produce section, they just kind of get neglected. So that was one of the things I really learned. And then I think through the ACLM and their certification, as I've kind of moved more toward a plant-forward, plant-based diet myself, I really didn't know how significant, you know, for instance, some of the animal products could be damaging and inflammatory to health. So I didn't kind of realize, you know, red meat or processed meats and things like that. I just didn't, I was like, oh, well, just moderation and sustainability and buy good products and it's probably fine. But then when I saw the data correlating to cardiovascular disease and, you know, all-cause mortality, I'm like, wow. And then, you know, in our fertility literature, we have that too, that observational data, like from the Nurses Health study, that, you know, generally red meat and processed meat, that people who consume more of that, when they did those, you know, dietary recall studies, they would say that, yeah, they had lower fertility. So that I learned. And then the other interesting fact, I think, is that when you think about dairy products, which some people have dairy in their diet and other people don't, but there, you know, for the longest time was this whole low fat, non-fat thing. And the whole milk, the whole fat dairy, so whole fat yogurt or whole fat milk, has been shown to be better for people who have anovulatory infertility. So that's women with PCOS frequently. So they really, you know, seem to need, if they are going to be incorporating dairy, which is, you know, optional, but the whole, we recommend the whole fat instead of the non-fat or low fat.
Gotcha.
In terms of your book, and, you know, this is a recorded session, when is your book coming out and what can people anticipate or expect from reading your book?
Well, yeah, the book is coming out April 9th and it's going to be available at all major booksellers. So the thing about the book is, you know, we try and lay out the why at the beginning, like, why are these foods important? Why would you want to do this? You know, we talk about anti-inflammatory foods. We talk about fiber, and we talk, you know, about a lot of these things, antioxidants. And then we go into each kind of food group and talk about, again, in a general level, we don't get in the weeds with a lot of this stuff, but just like a big overall, like if you do want to know some of the nutrients in individual foods, we're going to bring it out. We try and give the high level view and then some takeaways at the end of the chapter and some smart goals people could try to incorporate if they wanted to make little changes along the way. And then I think the thing our book is bringing is our personal experience, having helped thousands of women on this journey over, you know, more than a decade. And so that we, you know, when we helped people, when people worked with us and they were just, you know, brimming with enthusiasm, waiting to share their story and their experience. And so we have a lot of that feedback from people who really did it. So the real, like, this works and here's why. And these were the points that, you know, the take homes that you need to think about, and just sharing people's journey, individual journeys, and these individual narratives that people had from the highs and the lows and just the struggles. And so I think from somebody at home reading it, you can be like, oh my gosh, I identify with this. I totally get that view. And I've been there. You know, some people have had miscarriages, some people have needed surgeries. So all these things women and their partners go through as they're struggling with fertility, we try and highlight that in the book and take a really positive attitude along the way. So it's really like, you know, inclusive, not restrictive, and saying like, there's a range of what you can do individually that's going to work. And so don't feel like you have to go all to one side or the other, but just like wherever you are in your range, just like make it a little bit better every week, add a little more of those nutrients that we know are going to improve things overall.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, that's how, you know, we counsel and coach here at the Chef Doc is, you know, as a primary care physician, family practice trained, I have to meet people everywhere on the spectrum, you know, including OBGYN. And, you know, you have to meet people where they're at, and it's not an all or nothing thing. It's not black and white. And we're not telling people to go vegan overnight. It's really about counseling and coaching people along the spectrum. And so even if every American adopted meatless Mondays, for example, we would be so far more along in terms of not just individual health, but as a community and globally as well, because there's a lot of sustainability issues like we talked about. you know, looking at time, and you've talked about your book, are there three takeaways that if Judy was here, the combining minds of you both, three takeaways that you've gathered from the program that you've done since 2012, what are some three key takeaways that you've learned that you would want to share with our audience today?
Well, I think three, I mean, so many great things, but you know, one is when you, yes, you recognize where you are, what you grew up cooking. If you grew up cooking, or if you cooked as an adult, it's a fun thing to work on. Like, you know, most people enjoy food, they enjoy, but they might not have the skills. And so if you, you know, number one is like, learn some efficiencies in the kitchen, like take a knife skills class, which you could do on YouTube now. So you can do those things online without having to leave your home, and just learn how to be efficient. Because when you are incorporating, that's the other thing, time is of the essence, right? So everybody has time pressure. And so if you're going to be cooking more vegetables, you're going to have to learn how to, you know, prep them and cook them and have them available as snacks and things like that. You can also use shortcuts. So Judy is really great at giving people shortcuts. Like, you know what? In a lot of grocery stores, they have pre-cut vegetables. And so you can buy those, or you can buy a bag of frozen vegetables. They're already kind of halfway there, right? And so if you use those when you're cooking or stir fries, you have these shortcuts you can use. So we always talk about time saving and also budget saving things to think about. We talk a lot about things like, you know, meal planning and prep. That's been one of, so some of the biggest takeaways were like meal planning and prep, like thinking about your meals for the week. Like we do Sundays. So we like to meal prep and plan on Sundays, cook some big meals that are going to be used for the next, at least halfway through the week, to kind of have our mind, oh, then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday come, we've got meals ready to go. We're not like having to spend the time to think, decide, shop, all those steps that just make you say, I'm going to pick up the phone and order something else. Planning and prepping is key. The other thing we really talk about a lot is, you know, intuitive eating or mindful eating. So we talk about a lot of people rush, you know, it's just functional, like eating, I've got to eat something, or I'm eating because it's the right time of day, or I'm eating because something else. Like, and so trying to get in touch with your hunger signals and kind of stay, you know, not too full, not starving, you know. So you want, if you're getting a little bit hungry, that's when you want to eat. And then kind of enjoying the food, enjoying the time with other people, if you're eating with other people, and appreciating everything that went into that meal, right? So the growers, the people who helped you get it to the store, you who produced it, you know, the meal itself, and incorporating lovely spices and global flavors and all that lovely stuff that can go into it can make you not only eat more nutrient dense food, which is going to help, but just enjoy it more and have fun with it. So those are some of the takeaways.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we're definitely going to provide the links in terms of where to get your book. That's coming out on April 9th. And super, super excited for you and also Judy to be able to work in partnership and collaboration of this fantastic, you know, project that is very, very much needed, that kind of like the iPhone, you didn't know that you needed, but you know, it's like wonderful that it's here.
Right.
So thank you so much for taking the time out to share with our audiences today.
Great. Thank you so much, Colin. It's been great.
Guys, if you enjoyed this, please like, subscribe, and comment. And if you feel like this was a benefit for someone else, please let them know. And until the next episode, please say goodbye to Dr. Angela. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Hey, guys, we hope you enjoy that episode. If you like that, please like, comment, and subscribe. And please follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, and anywhere that you listen to your podcasts. And if you felt that this was a benefit for someone else, please let them know. And also remember that the first 5 seasons, 150 episodes, now can be seen and heard on our new The Chef Doc app. And don't forget to give us a 5-star rating, and we greatly appreciate it. So, and we'll see you on the next one.